Recording of webinar.
Can't see that, can you?
I'm going to pick 1 o'clock. Everyone else ready to go?
Yep.
So silence from now, please.
Good afternoon and welcome to this presentation on the Climate Change Authority's Targets and Progress Review Final Report. My name is Anthea Harris. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the Climate Change Authority. I'm going to give a short presentation on the key findings and recommendations on our report, and then there'll be an opportunity for questions towards the end. You can submit questions at any time through this webinar. Firstly, a little bit about us. The Climate Change Authority is an independent statutory authority, and our job is to provide evidence-based advice to the government about climate change policies. Bernie Fraser is our chair, and we have 8 other members with a broad range of expertise covering climate change science, economics, business and public policy. Our reviews are all legislated and they're guided by legislative principles, which boil down to economic efficiency, environmental effectiveness and equity. And we operate in a very transparent way, and we're obliged to consult with the public on all of our reviews. So this particular review, the Targets and Progress Review, is all about what Australia's emissions reduction goals should be and how we're progressing towards those goals. It's particularly timely for 2 main reasons. First of all, Australia has an opportunity in 2014 to be reviewing its 2020 target. So at the moment, Australia has a minimum target on the table, and 2014 is its opportunity to say whether it's sticking with that or increasing that target. And next year, Australia will be expected to put forward its post-2020 goals. Also on the domestic front, currently the government is formulating details of its new policy, new climate change policy known as the Direct Action Policy. And so the work that we have done, we hope will be useful for that process because it identifies where we have made progress in reducing emissions to date and where there are opportunities for further reductions. For example, in light vehicles, perhaps a role for standards, continued deployment of renewables, and we could find other cost-effective ways of achieving stronger targets, for example, through the use of international emissions reductions, which we'll talk more about later in this presentation. In making our recommendations, we've looked at the latest in climate change science, which really forms the backdrop and the fundamental understandings for all the work that we do. We look very carefully at global action, what other countries are doing. We of course know that Australia can't solve the problems of climate change all by itself. We look at equity, and this on a number of dimensions, between countries and between generations. And also we look very carefully at what the economic implications would be of the recommendations that we make. We've consulted extensively throughout this review. We've received over 12,000 written submissions. We've held a number of expert workshops and stakeholder roundtables. We've made presentations to interested groups and state and territory governments. The authority has work is grounded in the fact that it's in Australia's strong national interest to be part of international efforts to reduce the risks of climate change. We know that human activities are causing the climate to warm, and climate change poses major risk for Australia's people in relation to health issues, for our economy, particularly in relation to agricultural productivity, the situation of our cities and our infrastructure by the coast, and for our environment, so degradation of coral reefs, species extinction, as some of the examples there. Global action to avoid the worst impacts of climate change will benefit Australia. It is in our strong interest to be encouraging others to take strong action on climate change, and Australia should play its part in that action. So what are we recommending? We're recommending a set of goals for Australia to take action on climate change. For the short term, we're recommending a minimum target of 15% plus an extra 4%, which is really credit that we've got from past action called carryover. For the medium term, we're recommending a target range, a trajectory range of between 40 to 60% compared with 2000 levels by 2030. And for the long term, we're recommending that Australia's emissions stays within a budget of 10.1 gigatons, so 10.1 billion tonnes of carbon dioxide equivalent in the period between 2013 and 2050. Just give you a picture of what those goals might look like. All of that yellow triangle that we've illustrated there is what we propose as a long-term national budget. That hashed area of the triangle is the how much of that budget we propose to use up between now and 2020 if our emissions reduction recommendations are adopted. You can see that trajectory range going out to 2030. The middle of that range, so between 40 and 60%, the middle of that range is a 50% reduction by 2030. That would be using up our proposed long-term budget in a straight line fashion. You can see that the bottom of that target range, so the 40% number, means that we're using up less of that budget, potentially saving more for later, or potentially opting for a tighter budget altogether. The top of that target range really isn't consistent with that budget. So that's really a situation you go to the top of that budget, that target range, if you've decided that that budget is no longer appropriate for Australia. In relation to the 2020 targets, the authority considers that this is consistent with the science and it's fair to future generations. If we stick with our minimum commitment of a 5% target, it risks a costly and disruptive adjustment in the future. It leaves too much of the effort to later. We also know that a target of 15 plus 4 is in line with the efforts of similar countries, including the United States. So if we look at the countries that we normally like to compare ourselves with, we can see that keeping with this minimum target of a 5% target does not keep up with the scale and pace of international action. And we know that from an economic perspective, a target of 15 plus 4 can be achieved while the economy and national incomes continue to grow. Looking at this issue of how quickly we use up this proposed long-term national budget, this chart illustrates that your decisions about where you go to 2020 and 2030 have great implications for how quickly you would need to reduce emissions later. You can see the red line relates to the minimum 5% target. You can see that, of course, the less you do later, the more quickly that budget is exhausted, and it entails extraordinarily steep and rapid reductions at later times. So the more you do in the short term, the more of that budget you have later, and the less rapidly that you need to reduce emissions in coming decades. Of course, we know that Australia can't solve this problem alone, and we have looked at a broad range of international action. We've also looked very carefully at what China and the US are doing, because we know from the basis of the arithmetic of climate change, we need those two very large emitters, which together account for at least 37% of global emissions. We need those countries to be taking this issue seriously. And the good news is that there is growing evidence that that is the case. So they are both stepping up their efforts on climate change. And we can see that in evidence, not only by the targets that they have on the table, which are significant, but also their actions on the ground. So for example, huge investments in renewable energy in both of these countries. We can see very strong vehicle emission standards in both of those countries. They have much stronger requirements than we have here in Australia. In fact, technically, we have no standards here in Australia that are mandatory at all. We can also see subnational emissions trading schemes in both of those countries in operation and under development. Both of those countries are also now turning their mind to what they might be doing after 2020. In our report, we go through the commitments of a range of other countries, and we've looked at it very explicitly across a number of dimensions. And this is a chart that's reproduced from our report, and I encourage you to have a look at the more detailed analysis here. We've looked at it from a number of perspectives, so absolute emissions reductions, changes in emissions intensity of your whole economy, reductions from business as usual emissions, and what it means for per person emissions. All of these ways of looking at things are all relevant and important. And so we've done a very transparent analysis of this, and we can see where Australia's different targets might line up against what other countries are doing. And you can see the red dots there are, if we stick with our minimum commitment of -5, it does look weak compared with what other countries are doing, particularly wealthy advanced economies such as ourselves. As I said at the start of this presentation, we've looked very carefully at what the economic costs might be of pursuing stronger targets. Now, this chart shows our estimated impacts on gross national income per capita from 2013 to 2020, going from the minimum 5% commitment, stepping up to that stronger commitment of 19%, which is that minimum 15% commitment plus the 4% of carryover. And you can see that the impact on the growth rate of gross national income per capita is very small. In both those scenarios, incomes are estimated to still continue to rise, and that there's only a 0.02% change in the annual growth rate between 2013 and 2020. And in fact, that gap in where gross national income per person would be in 2020 would actually be made up in 3 months' time. Turning now to the medium term, so for 2030 goals, wide range of stakeholders across the spectrum really supported the authority making recommendations about life beyond 2020. The trajectory range that we have proposed of 40 to 60% provides some flexibility for Australia to adjust its action. It's probably too early right now to be able to pinpoint exactly where Australia's emissions should be targeting for 2030. We can have some flexibility to take into account changing circumstances. In particular, the authority recommends that longer term goals always be reviewed in the light of developments in climate science, the level of international action, and economic factors. We recommend that both the trajectory ranges and the long term emissions budget be regularly reviewed according to those criteria. All of our recommendations are set out in the context of a proposed long-term national budget for greenhouse gas emissions. The idea of this budget is to set an overall limit on emissions. Once you start thinking about this long-term global budget, it really highlights the trade-offs between short-term action and longer-term action. You can start thinking about how quickly you want to use up that budget and what it implies for future decades and future generations for Australia. In terms of how we've calculated this budget, first of all, to get to a budget from Australia, we've started from a global emissions budget that provides a likely chance of limiting global warming to below 2 degrees. This is an internationally agreed goal to try and avoid the very worst impacts of climate change. The authority considers that Australia's fair share of that global budget is 10.1 gigatons of carbon dioxide equivalent. Just to put that in perspective, that's around 17 years of emissions at current levels. The authority considers its 2020 recommended target to be the minimum reduction consistent with staying within that budget, and having a weaker target than that recommended target would leave too much effort for later. The second part of our review talks about what kind of progress we have made already towards our emissions reduction goals. This chart highlights from the perspective of the overall economy what's been going on since the year 2000. Now, you can see that we've broken this down because, of course, there are lots of things going on in the economy which will affect overall emissions. On the very right-hand side, we've got the net impacts of what actually happened to emissions, and that is they went up between 2000 and 2011. But we've broken that down. So on the very left-hand side, we can see that economic activity generally pushed emissions up. So it's a period of strong economic growth, which tends to cause emissions to increase. On the other hand, the next bar shows that particularly in earlier years, shifts in our economic structure help push emissions down. There was a tendency to move away from very emissions intensive processes towards less emissions activities such as services, for example. So that tended to have, over the period, a dampening impact on emissions. We can also see that emissions reductions activity, so this is actual reductions in the emissions intensity of doing the same thing, that actually made a significant contribution towards reducing greenhouse gas emissions. So there's quite a lot of it, breakdown across sectors in our report. We also identify many opportunities across all sectors to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And some of those opportunities relate to energy efficiency across the spectrum in our industry, our homes and our businesses, and using more efficient transport. We can also see significant opportunities to transition towards lower emissions intensity electricity generation. In fact, of all the sectors that we analyse, we see some of the greatest potential in the electricity sector. Adopting low emissions technologies and production processes in a range of industries. And on the land sector, continuing to reduce land clearing, increase forest cover, and improve land and forest management. While we can see those opportunities, we will need effective policies to actually elicit those opportunities in the real world. And given the time taken to develop, implement, and implement policies, and then for them to have some effect, if we want longer term change, we actually need to be thinking about those policies now. Some of the challenges that we see, if there were no additional policies, so without a direct action plan, without a carbon price, our estimate is that in 2020 emissions would be 17% above 2000 level emissions. Looking at very strong incentives or a very high carbon price as it has been modelled, we could see emissions being as low as 6% below 2000 levels. There's a good deal in the report about the need for Australia to remain competitive in a future low emissions world. We do see that gradually transforming our economy to put it on a lower emissions footing will be in our long-term economic interests. For the shorter term in particular, we do see a role for drawing on international emissions reductions to help meet the targets that we have recommended. So we see a mixture of domestic and international emissions reductions contributing to those 2020 goals. Genuine international emissions reductions can meet the recommended target in a cost-effective way. This is a good time to be drawing on these particular types of units. There are high-quality units available at historically low prices at the moment. We recommend that the government could establish a fund to purchase these international units, which could help bridge the gap between domestic reductions and the recommended target. Now, just going from minus 5 to minus 19, so the 15 plus 4, it's estimated that this fund would need between $210 million and $850 million between now and 2020. And this is based on unit prices of between 50 cents and $2 a tonne, recognising that current prices are well below $1 currently. In terms of what the job that we see for international emissions reductions, here is the picture of our projected emissions, that blue line going to 17% above 2000 levels by 2020. That yellow triangle is the gap between where we see a kind of a business as usual projection and the minus five. So you can see a significant gap there of 593 megatons. There may be a role even within that for international emissions reductions to play some role in contributing to meeting that gap. But in particular, this gap between minus 5 and minus 19, we do see that as being a role for international emissions reduction. So that's getting to that stronger target would be a very good using international emission reductions would be a very good way to achieve that target. So in summary, the science is clear. The world urgently needs to cut greenhouse gas emissions. We know that Australia would benefit from global action, and so we need to play our part. We need to strengthen our efforts now, otherwise we leave future generations with an improbably large task. The responsible course of action is to raise our 2020 target to at least 15%. We can boost this to 19% by taking advantage of actions that we've already taken. And the target is achievable. There's strong policies implemented now. The costs are small and they can be managed. Thank you. Let's now turn to questions. have one question here, but the EU is already committed to a 20% reduction by 2020 from its 1990 levels. Why should Australia commit to only a 19% reduction, given that Australia's per capita greenhouse gas emissions are about twice EU levels? So, in relation to our comparisons with the EU, first of all, I'd like to say that all of our recommendations are put in the perspective of trying to balance up where we are now to where we go in the future, all nested in what we think is a reasonable long-term budget for Australia. So the recommendations that we have made we think are achievable given where we are right now, but still calibrated to make those long-term emission reductions, staying within our long-term budget, achievable. So in the authority's view, this balances up all of those different parameters, and this is something that is achievable as well as being responsible for Australia. I have another question here, is that what are the implications for Australia in international climate negotiations if the government does not accept the CCA's recommendations for a stronger target and participation in the international carbon market? Well, it's difficult to say what exactly the implications would be. What we can say is that it would certainly help in our international negotiations if Australia took on a stronger target. We know that our chief objective should be trying to encourage other countries to take stronger actions. It's very difficult to ask other countries and point the finger and ask other countries to do more if you're not being seen to be taking strong action yourselves. We're one of the wealthiest countries in the world. We have very high emissions per capita. It's very difficult to make a case to others to do a lot if we can't be seen to be taking stronger action ourselves. It will be noticed what we do. It wasn't a surprise to us when our draft report came in that our first submission that we received was from South Africa. The rest of the world does watch us, what Australia does. Okay, I've got a next question here. If all carbon dioxide emissions were stopped today, if all carbon dioxide emissions were stopped today, it could take up to 1,000 years to see a reduction in temperature. Given this, why is there a rush to reduce greenhouse gas emissions now? Well, I think the answer to that question is thinking back to the science and what causes temperatures to rise and what causes the risks that we face from climate change. Climate change is all about, is a stock problem. It's about how many greenhouse gases are in the atmosphere at any one time. It's exactly correct to say that it takes a long time for emissions to wash out of the system entirely, but given we know it's a stock problem, we can't solve it if we keep adding to the stock. The more that we add, the bigger the problem, the higher the concentration of greenhouse gases, the more heat the world absorbs. So we can't attempt to solve this problem without getting on top of the amounts of greenhouse gases that we're continuing to add to the atmosphere. The more quickly we can do that, then the lower the level of greenhouse gases will be in the atmosphere for the longer term. Okay, I've got a question here about without the purchase of international units, what can Australia achieve what can Australia achieve domestically, particularly in the electricity sector? Well, we can see that actually there's quite a bit that can be done in our own domestic electricity sector. So point you to the modelling that we have done, and in particular on our website there's a separate modelling report in particular on the emissions in the electricity sector under a whole range of different scenarios. So I certainly encourage you to have a look at that. There's a couple of things that we can see being particular opportunities. For Australia, the continuing deployment of renewable energy in the shorter term out to 2020 seemed like the major source of emissions reductions from that sector. On the demand side, we can also see significant opportunities for reducing greenhouse gases by reducing our demand for electricity. I've got another question here. Does the government have to do anything in response to this report? Our legislation requires that the government table our report within 15 sitting days of Parliament. The legislation also requires the government to respond to our recommendations. They have 6 months to respond to those recommendations. The government has already responded that they will look at our consider our recommendations carefully. We have another question here. Achieving low carbon transformation in Australia will be important for future national competitiveness. Bearing this in mind, how should the nation balance the share of emissions reductions procured from overseas versus those achieved in Australia? This is really a question about what's the right balance between domestic effort and international effort. And it's difficult to come up with the perfect magic answer there. What we would point out, though, is that long-term transformation of our domestic economy is important. It's not something that we can put off forever. We wouldn't recommend not attempting any reductions in our own greenhouse gas emissions. However, we know, for example, particularly to 2020, that it's not very far away. We know even if we wanted to, we couldn't get very large domestic emissions reductions from our own economy. We've left our run a bit late. So we do think, though, that that shouldn't be an excuse, really, for Australia to make a smaller contribution to international emissions reduction efforts. We have these markets for international emissions reductions. That's what they're there for. They're there to allow countries like Australia to make a bigger contribution by drawing on cheaper emissions reductions from elsewhere. They also play an important role in developing countries as well. Through investments from richer countries like Australia, they can help put them on a lower emissions growth path. Okay, got another question here. We have a question here. How would Australia's 15% target compare to the US's target? Now, very unhelpfully, countries have expressed their targets in according to different base years. So we've always talked about our target being compared with our 2000 level emissions. The US has a target of reducing its greenhouse gas emissions by 17% compared with its 2005 level emissions. And we talk about this in one of the appendices in our report. So the US will actually, if it meets its 17% target, it's actually going to be 20% below its 2000 level emissions in 2020. Putting it round the other way, if we were to be 17% below our 2005 level emissions, then that's the equivalent of being 10% below our 2000 level emissions. I hope that's clear. I point you to the direction of the appendix where we talk about that in our report. Another question here, what are the financial implications or economic costs if we don't take on board the CCA recommendations? Well, there's probably two things that are important here. Why are we doing any of this? It's because we need to make a contribution to international efforts on climate change. I'm not suggesting that we can solve the global problem ourselves, but we do need to play our part. And so if we give up on attempting to influence international efforts, or we fail to care, the implications would be that we don't care that actually there would be things going on in the climate system which have profound impacts for our society and our economy. So the cost to our economy of unabated climate change would be tremendous, and I would certainly refer you to the Garner review that was done a few years ago for much more information about that. Then there's the impact on our own competitiveness. If the rest of the world does continue to take action, we don't want to be stranded essentially with the equivalent of a rust bucket economy based on very high emissions intensity that would not be competitive in a lower emissions intensity world. I've got a question here. If minus 15 is responsible, is minus 5 irresponsible? Well, the Climate Change Authority recommends minus 15 as a minimum. We do think that minus 5 puts too much effort onto the shoulders of future Australians. In fact, not even necessarily future Australians, us current Australians, if we intend to be around beyond 2020. The types of emissions reductions that would be required, if we're taking seriously the goal of actually playing our fair part in international efforts, would be very steep. We have a question here. Isn't tripling of the target in just 6 years somewhat unrealistic? In the authorities' view, no. In fact, I might take you back to some slides. There was the slides where we had the chart. No, I can't go back. That's all right. Back to the slides, which I think you have access to. We've got the gap between where we think business as usual emissions might be and the 5%. And you can see that was a gap in 2020 of being between 17% above 2000 levels and minus 5. So there's a 22 percentage point gap just to get to minus 5. Actually, to get from minus 5 to minus 19, which is that 15 plus 4, is only another 14 percentage point gap. And because we have access to international emissions units available at the moment at historically low prices, we consider this target is eminently achievable. Okay, this probably relates to this next question. Is your report saying that Australia could meet a target of 15% by buying international permits for $200 million? First of all, there's a few things to note here. This is about the incremental cost of getting from minus 5 to minus 19, so that 15 plus 4. And if you did all of that, as we recommend, by purchasing international emissions units, of course it depends on the price of those international units. We've done a range of costings, you know, if they were 50 cents up to if they were $2, and that works out to be, you have to buy 427 million of them, so that works out to be between $210 million and $850 million between now and 2020. Has our review taken into account the nature of any post-2020 agreement? At this stage, we know some things, but there's still a lot of flesh to be put on the bones about what a post-2020 agreement might look like. We're not actually 100% sure of what the time frame will be for that agreement, whether the commitments will be based around 2030 or some earlier time. That said, at the end of the day, we do know that we have strong engagement from a whole host of countries, importantly including China and the US. We do know that we will need to be able to put some sort of numbers on the table. So the recommendations that we're making now for beyond 2020, so from 40 to 60% reductions by 2030, are certainly relevant for thinking about what we're going to put on the table ourselves in 2015. There's a question here, how would we communicate a new target through the United Nations? There are a number of opportunities to do that, so there'll be through formal and less formal channels. There'll be opportunities earlier next year, but really all leading up to the conference in Paris in December in 2015. Okay. We have one final question. Do you consider that the price of international units to be very sensitive to the potential purchase of 400 million units? We've done quite a bit of analysis on this, and we've certainly spoken to a lot of people who are actively engaged in this market. And even though you'd think that going out and buying 400 million of anything might potentially have quite a significant impact on the price, actually, all the evidence that we have to date is that no, we don't think that Australia purchasing that many units would have any very significant impact on the price. In fact, most commentators didn't think it would have any noticeable impact at all. Okay, that's all that we have time for today. Thank you very much for your attendance. If you have any further questions, please feel free to contact us. And you can find on our website an inquiries line, so you please feel free to email any further questions through to there. Thank you very much. kept taking the questions that away from me.
Sorry, they're coming in so fast.
I think the better solution would have been if we had you guys facing it here.
Yeah, actually,
that was really bad that you were facing the wall.
I'll be reading it out.
And then I'd be like, oh, no, back.
You did really well.
Was anybody listening? Was it only Claire's mum and dad again?
No,
all those questions are real.
Oh, were they? Yeah.
No, I thought you took a bloody talking one.
All except for two. All except for two were real.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, no,
they're all coming
in. Did you not
see
that? There was one question you avoided answering, which was about 6%. So what?
Direct action. What can direct action really achieve if you need really strong policy to get to 6?
That was in direct response. That was in direct response to your slides. They've obviously been watching it and gone right.
We were getting them in real time.
Yeah, sorry, it's French for getting them up on the screen for you and filtering them.
Yeah,
and
there
were a
few
we were just like. How many do you think you got?
I can't.
20 or 30 or?
No.
So there were probably about five that we didn't do at all.
Okay.
Didn't
put
up at all, and there were a couple that you didn't answer.
Was it a bit hard because I wasn't sure where I was and stuff then.
Yeah.
I was trying to highlight them.
That's awful.
We were trying to delete the old ones, but it was like, don't delete it until she's finished
entering it because
she might
remember what I was talking about.
No, but then it was already gone, so we'd go back to the question screen and
yes.
just said questions. So I was sitting there going, I can't remember what they just asked. I hope Anthony can.
She's like, knew that I was going,
You visibly got into a bit of a groove, though, and just was... It was like a machine watching a machine going, right, churn through them.
It's very old.
Well done.
Sort of thing.
Really. It must be hard on someone to talk to.
Yes.
You did one really well.
She went back on the screen.
Thank you, everybody. How long was that? That was 20? 35 minutes.
35 minutes.
Perfect. Very much.
I reckon that was great. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Great.
Oh.
I was like, I don't know how long it is.
Well done, Andrew. Thank you. And well done, Andy and team.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
So we'll have that as video on the website?
It's actually amazing. So you can click to a slide and it will put the presentation at that point.
That's great.
Cool. Right.
We didn't get back to that graph, though.
No.
Very clear.
What they called it?
Very clear.
Bracket.
I don't know about that graph line, actually.
Yeah, it's a bit of a hard one.
Yeah.
It's not when you're sitting down with people. You can put it
as
a presentation, but they're not good.
I
was looking at this
guy
this morning. Minister Office, one guy, he was on
you're sitting down.
You're sitting
down.
You can
see this bit. It's
funny. I was looking at slide that this morning. It was just like, gorgeous, 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 gorgeous. We've made programs with bar graphs. Don't know what this is about. Surely we have a better. We've made progress.
It's a bit of a
emissions intensity has halved. We can have a line going down.
Yeah, we
like that's
that
we've made progress. And you can actually put the information from the bar
in as
text boxes on the line, like,
Andrew,
this period.
Thank you very much.
Largely due to blah. This
thank
period,
you.
Largely
thank
due to blah.
Do about.
First team tag
and
go. Sounded really good.
I'll see you back at the office. It's all right. Is there anything you want us to carry?
No.
What have you got?
Just the laptop.
All right.
Good job.
Well done, Andrew.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, you might be able to freeze the screen she's seeing
without
your computer.
Yeah, I know. That's what I was doing in the end. I was switching away because on the first answer where I left her, she was getting distracted by what you were doing.
So I kept
switching away, and that's why.
But
it switches to the questions,
doesn't it? Whereas it'd be great if we could have just had that frozen on the question list that she was seeing, and then for us to be able to do blah, and then to go back live to this screen so that we can.
Yeah. There is a way.
That's okay. We'll do that next time.
Yeah.
If we get to do another teleconference before you're abolished.
So we have another sort of people who kind of people online know that it's all life and stuff. They know that it's going to be pauses and stuff.
Yeah. No, it was fun. It was like went very well.
There was about 63 people.
Yeah. Okay. Good to know. Yeah, for us the main thing is being able to load it up as video so that people who are interested.
Yep, so I can do it today if I just chop the start and the end,
mm-hmm.
or I can cut out all the bits where she said, oh, I can't see this, whatever.
Yeah, no, it'd be great if you could edit
that
out.
Yeah, so I'll do that tomorrow then, if that's cool, and
it'll
be up by the end of tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool, thank you.
I just popped all the camera stuff over there in the windows and set it out the way, you know, together.
Yeah, cool, the guys will come up and pack it
quickly. So I'm not sure whether cases or...
Yeah, they have to take more downstairs.
Right,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. See you guys.
Thanks, man. Cheers. Thanks, guys.
Am I released?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, so I just had a rush of excitement. That was my last job for a while.
Ooh, how
fun. I'm going to get on a plane.
When are you going?
I'm
going
to tell you in hours. Hold on.
Oh.
Oh, I can't get it. 2 days, 7 hours and 17 minutes.
Whoa.
Out of town.
Lots of fun.
Yeah, so I'll see you both again.
Crown
Palladium,
I'm
sure. Sorry?
Have a drink in the Philippines for me.
Yes, I will. They love getting on it. They've got this beer called Red Horse, and it's like 7%. And it's got like the symbol is like this big horseshoe on this red background, and it really gives like a horse's kick to in the face. Like, I didn't know the first time. I just got a six pack and, you know, it's hot and sweaty and I'm just putting them away. And then after, I had a six and then my lips are going numb and I'm like, hold on a second, what's going on here? I'm spastic. I have to go to the lie down.
Oh no. How many did you have?
Just six, just like stubby sized ones.
Six and it
7%, but it was like I'd had a dozen
in
like Australian beer.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, have a few of them for me then.
Oh, yeah. Alright.
All right.
Yeah. All the best.
See you later.
See you later.
When did this show come in? Was it a late one?
It came in 2 weeks ago when I won in Canberra. Why, what do you mean?
Oh, no, because I only got put on Monday.
So. I only got moved to Park Hyatt on Friday. Who do you know it's going to be in their office?
I wasn't on anything at all.
Well, Fletcher originally said I couldn't have you because you worked late last night. And he offered me a beer and I was like, let's have a look at your retainer. I was like, well, if she comes at midday, she's had 12 hours off.
Next year.
music is out, but I had to.
Music.
Don't mind that track.
You have to get your tribal one now. You go out in the bush. In the middle of it, it's like 4 hours away. I reckon you'd have a ball.
I bought a tent a few weeks ago.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Just a...
Strapped to the back of the bike.
Just a one man.
First a three man.
Cool. We bought a new tent this year as well. It's freaking enormous.
You've not got a book part yet.
Pardon?
I think there's my part. Pretty sure.
I'll give him a ring until we're done. Doing anything on the weekend?
No.
No shows?
No, I might go camping in Lake Eildon.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Harvey and Yells are moving this weekend, so I'm
going
to ride his motorbike for him to his new house.
Oh, does Harvey have a motorbike?
Yeah.
Together.
Oh, they've already been living together for a while.
Have they?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. It's like ages ago I asked Yells, she said that she was going to check the move. I said, are you going to be with that? She's like, oh no, not yet.
Yeah.
And then Matt's going to South Africa or something the day after.
Yeah, Monday, yeah.
I should come down to Maitreya then. Come for the weekend.
How much did that set me back?
I think they're like up to 200 now. For when we got the Marowak 160. I've got to learn hula hooping.
For the festival?
Oh, they do, like, they have like a, they call it the village. And they have like workshops and talks and stuff as well. And I saw they've got a hula hooping one, I'm like, I'm gonna do that. And they do like yoga and stuff in the morning.
Oh, they've left a Dick's phone.
I thought that would be more exciting, but it wasn't.
No.
And it was a bit conservative. Like, there was no doom and gloom on there.